J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
When a man meets the woman he loves, everything changes. His heart races, his head spins. And suddenly, all the dozens and dozens of women he's sleeping with no longer matter. A few years ago, I found the woman I love, and I've put some of my feelings into this little ode. Every man needs a woman, and I need you. To lift me when I am sad, to comfort me when I am down, to clean me when I am drunk, to walk beside me when I want to look like I am not gay. To walk in front of me when I need someone to act as a human windbreak. To kiss me when I am horny. To massage me when I am tense and or horny. To make me horny when I am not horny. And then to watch me fall asleep. I need you, darling, to clean between my toes when they are not clean to my satisfaction. To pick the nits out of my hair when I have head lice. To try milk for me when I am not sure of the expiration date. To be there when I need you to be there, and to be out of town the rest of the time. My darling, although it may seem sentimental, I want to take this moment to tell you I love you, because I don't want to lose half my stuff. Good night, my love.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, April 13th, 2023. You are at jconline.com. If you were listening yesterday, you know that we ran a test on the new radio station and it failed. I have some good news and some bad news. We ran another test today and it worked, but there were two things playing at the same time. Now, that is one way for a radio station to back up its claim that it plays more music. Because we play two things at the same time. Wow. Yeah. So, again, progress. I got the thing as far as being on the air, but then when it played, two things were running. So, we got people working on it. But that's how close we are. That's how close we are with this thing. If we can just get this glitch figured out and corrected, boom, we're on the air. We're set to go. Who knows what tomorrow will bring? Breathe deep the gathering gloom. Watch lights fade from every room. Laura Hediger on Channel 4. All right, we've already established long ago that she's a ditz, and there's plenty of hands-on evidence to back up that claim. She's basically got three things going for her, all right? Three things going for her. She has an astonishing athletic figure. There's no question about that. We never try to take that away from her. That's why the guys watch. She is married to a doctor, which, of course, is the dream of all of the middle-aged housewives who watch that show and just sort of walk around vacuuming in a pair of sweatpants while deep in the recesses of their minds they're thinking about, I should have stayed with Bob. He was in medical school, but it was just going to take so long for him to get his medical degree, and that would have been 8 years, and, you know, I just don't know. So then Billy came along, and he owned his own window tinting company, and so I married him and had kids with him, and now I live in this house in Herculaneum. But if I would have stayed with Bob, I'd be just like Laura, married to a doctor. And then number three, she had a baby. It is not uncommon for women to have babies, but for some reason, Laura's baby is special. So Great Day wasn't even 10 minutes into the show, and Laura hit the trifecta.
But I look at it from a very different point of view because I'm married to a physician.
Moving on to Laura Hediger, basic element number two.
So you guys know I had a baby, right?
And let's wrap it up.
Huh, but Leo turned 4 months old yesterday. I kept him alive that long.
Someday, that baby is going to see her without all that makeup on and start screaming, "Where's my mommy?" Occupational hazard. Let's talk more crazy women. Victoria Jackson, when she was on Saturday Night Live, she didn't do that much, but the stuff she did was actually really funny. And again, she played an airhead ditz. We just assumed she was playing the role. Turns out she was running around the offices of Saturday Night Live handing out Bibles. True story. And apparently, while she was still living in New York, she was dating some dude who lived in Florida. So she goes on Letterman to talk about it. Well, actually to do more than talk.
I'm in New York in my office where people wear clothes because it's cold, while you're at a bar in Miami watching bimbos walk by in bikinis. I never look at other men because I have you, but you look at bimbos in bikinis. Do you have to? I don't like Miami. There's too much flesh out of control. When someone's boobs are in your face, how can you see their soul? Okay, wait. And then it's like, lust is rampant, and all I see are bikinis and bimbos on MTV and Playboy and commercials on streets everywhere. You'd have to be blind not to notice them. They're blind. Hey, if you were blind, our love could work. So I think I'll just get a knife and stab your eyes out. But I don't want you to be blind, because then you couldn't see me. So I guess I'll have to just go to a gym and work out real hard and buy a bikini. Wow. I'll buy a bikini.
My goodness gracious.
Now, see what I mean? That's really good. That's really funny. Well, since her time on Saturday Night Live back in the 80s, she's found a hobby. And the hobby is to show up at school board meetings and begin to pontificate, as was the case in Franklin, Tennessee, the other night, just outside of Nashville. This community, I have a couple of friends who live there, and I think it's sort of like considered the Austin, Texas of the Midwest. People are just raving about Franklin, Tennessee, because you're not so close that you have to deal with all the congestion of the city of Nashville, but you're far enough away so that apparently it's very, very, I gotta go there sometime very soon because I've been hearing so much about it. So anyhow, I guess she lives there, and so she just showed up at a school board meeting. Here's Victoria Jackson, where she is today.
Victoria Jackson. God hates sodomy. He hates homosexuality. He said it's an abomination. And God hates sexual immorality, all kinds, fornication, adultery, etc. And God hates pride. Like, one of the most things he hates is pride. Proverbs 11:12, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. The Lord detests all the proud of heart. Be sure of this, they will not go unpunished. Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. And Sodom and Gomorrah proves that God hates sodomy and sexual immorality and pride. And it's still there. And archaeologists have uncovered it. You can go on YouTube and see. It's a frozen city in sulfur and fire and brimstone. Brimstone is sulfur. I just want to encourage this generation not to be brainwashed.
Wow. How does something like that happen? You're on the greatest improvisational, historic comedy TV show of all time. Cutting edge stuff. And this is where you end up. Well, I guess it's like the porn stars who find Jesus. And we've talked about this before. This really, really irritates me. First of all religion, you know, look, I know that some people, for you, religion is like George Carlin used to say. It's like a lift in your shoes. If you think you need this little lift in your shoes and that's what you have decided to do, then go ahead. However, you don't get a free pass from people like me. They always say, don't ever criticize anybody for their religion. Why not? Where's that rule book? I think it's one of the first things you should criticize people of because you're believing in fantasy. And by the way, has anybody else noticed that maybe religion is taking a real hit here in the last 6 months since the Webb telescope went up? Because, you know, you don't have to be a historian to recall how the church's teachings insisted that Earth was the center of the universe, and that went on for hundreds of years. And then poor old Copernicus comes along and says, you know what? I've been out with the telescope the last couple of nights, and guess what I found? There's a ton of shit up there. And we're not the center of the universe. The universe is massive, and oh, by the way, we revolve around the sun. The sun is the center of our galaxy. And you know what they did? They threw him out of the church, and I think they tried to arrest him, too. Now, fast forward a couple of hundred years, people are starting to go, some of this isn't adding up. Now the Webb telescope comes along, and we're finding out that while everybody made jokes about Carl Sagan back in the 70s and 80s, and billions and billions, well, it turns out he was right all along. For thousands of years, man has been staring up there and going, look at that star. And now the Webb telescope goes up there and says, that's not a star, that's an entire galaxy. And by the way, there's billions of those up there, and now we're finding out more about black holes and even about the space-time continuum and whether or not time itself exists. I've been reading stuff lately about how we just assigned elements related to time so that we could have some order. And that's basically what it is. It's like people needed to figure out some way to establish policies and order and calendars and just, you know, you can't do anything without being able to measure it. You can't operate a budget in your own household unless you know how much money you have and how much you're spending. So you need policies. You need systems in place. And so somebody a really, really long time ago said, you know what we got to do? We got to figure out some way to measure all this. And they came up with time and calendars and stuff like that. But in reality, when you think about it, it actually makes sense. That's just stuff that we made up. There, in fact, according to these articles, may not be such a thing as time. Time may not exist. Should have rolled a doobie before I started this conversation. But anyhow, I digress. The hell was I even talking about?
And to watch Thank Beckett you. Cook on YouTube. Beckett Cook!
And there she goes. Oh, I remember I was going to say, you know, people talk about hitting rock bottom and then they turn their lives around and then they start finding Jesus. Well, you know, there's a lot of us who knew the difference between right and wrong, and we chose right over wrong. And while I think it's, you know, somewhat inspirational to watch somebody hit rock bottom, turn their lives around, get it back together, and somehow produce a productive life, it's very admirable. But it isn't more admirable than the people who said, well, this is bullshit. If you go that way, you're going to end up fat and sick and haggard and out of money and face down in a parking lot. I don't want to go that way. I'm going to choose the right way to do things, not the wrong way. Those are the people that we should be admiring. The people who knew the difference between right and wrong. It's very, very easy to go the wrong way. Can be more fun for at least a period of time before you hit rock bottom. But fucking up and then getting it right, that's not more admirable than somebody who chose the right way to do things and to be the kind of person who makes smart choices for themselves and doesn't have to bounce back, doesn't have to look back at years of their lives that they wasted or damage that they did to their overall health or appearance, not to mention their bank account. We're giving more credit to those people than to the people who exercise some sort of, you know, self-restraint. When people ask me if I have a favorite quote, I've been giving the same answer for 35 years now. And it's from the French poet Flaubert. And he said, "Be calm and peaceful in your life so that you may be wild and dangerous in your art." I know football players in the NFL who would rip your fucking head off every Sunday for about 3.5-4 hours. But then when they go in the clubhouse and they shower and change and put on their street clothes, they turn into like really, really nice, gentle people. Big old 275-pound men who go home and play with a kitten. and with their little two-year-old daughter. But then when they get back out on that football field, watch the fuck out, is the people that seem to have trouble delineating that line between what I do for a living to make money in my career or my business and what I'm like when I'm not performing in that function. I got into it the other day with some women who were accusing me of fat shaming. And this takes a little background too. I have members of my family who are battling severe weight gain. In one case, a family member had to have the surgery on a knee and has had just a brutal time recovering from that and can't exercise, can't move around. And so you just sit there and you know, and the calories just pile up and pile up and pile up. And the next thing you know, you've gained 50 pounds. I also have a family member who's been on a lot of medication, and some of that medication produces significant weight gain. I don't like that the medical people have come up with the term morbidly obese, which is the technical term for somebody who is, you know, like 100 and 150 or 200 or 500 pounds overweight. They can't come up with something better than morbidly obese? That's a hell of a thing to have to carry around if it's you. And I did great during the pandemic. I didn't gain any weight. Pandemic ended, I gained 10 pounds. I've got maybe three more to go to get back to where I was before all this started. And even before that, I've been trying to lose the same 20 pounds for 20 years. It's not easy. I'm not saying it is. But what does it say about it? And I got other friends, too, are battling really, really tough weight gain. And I really, really feel for them. It's difficult. You don't want to be that person on the bus or on the train or whatever airplane somewhere where some little three-year-old boy says, "Mommy, look how fat that man is." Because that stuff happens. I've seen it. Why would you just voluntarily put yourself behind the eight ball like that? Cuts down on, you know, what quality of human being you're going to be able to attract as a lover, as a partner. And I'm not saying it's not hard. It's very, very difficult. My point is this, and I'll use myself as an example. I have a number in my head, and if I get on the scale in the morning and I am over that number, I stop eating, I stop drinking wine, I cut way back on my food intake. I just basically tell myself, you got to back off here for a couple of days or a week or something like that and get back down to where you were. So I have that ceiling. I got that point where I just say, that's it. I'm not going over that. And I think there's probably a lot of people like that. For some women I know, it's like one day I tried to put my jeans on and I couldn't get into them. I couldn't close them. That's when I knew I had a problem and I knew I better back the fuck off. If you go to a restaurant and you like spaghetti, it would be really easy to say, give me two of the biggest bowls of spaghetti you got and heavy on the sauce and heavy on the meatballs and I'm going to eat them all right here. While the rest of us are going, tell you what, why don't we split the spaghetti and then we'll split a salad. We're going to have a wonderful meal and a great time here. We're just not going to eat like we're standing at a trough. The overwhelming percentage of the population understands basic things like this and just figures, I better take it easy for a couple of weeks. So when somebody comes along and just basically says, I'm going to do whatever I want, I'm going to eat as much as I want, I'm beautiful on the inside, and I don't care what you think, you deal with me. See, I don't subscribe to that. I don't believe that that's a fair argument to make. And what I really am opposed to is the people, and I had two the other night that I was dealing with, who were calling me all sorts of names and accusing me of fat shaming. Well, let's back up a little bit. First of all, and this all started because I posted a picture of Lauren Twees. Lauren Twees was the actress who portrayed cruise director Julie McCoy, and I'm embarrassed that I know that, on The Love Boat back in the 1970s. And they still run those Love Boat things on MeTV on Sunday afternoons, and I catch them just to watch who's on and to see what people looked like 40 years ago when they were on The Love Boat, and it is freaking hilarious. And it's amazing as I watch it. You know, I watch Gilligan's Island, still, it still makes me laugh here and there. I watch Hogan's Heroes, which is actually really, really funny. You forget how good an actor Werner Klemperer was. He was really, really good at being a comedic actor. He was excellent. And Green Acres has always made me laugh. I go back and watch that stuff. But The Love Boat, it's amazing that that passed as entertainment and then that show was as big as it was, because the stars were, I think, really weak. The plot lines were like written by a fourth grader. It was a shitty show with shitty actors. And Lauren Tweez, you know, one day you're watching The Love Boat and she just wasn't on. They replaced her with a different blonde. You know why? Because she had a major cocaine issue and she just basically coked her job away. And you look at her like, she did? This little skinny girl who looks like, I mean, you're talking about the girl next door. She was so squeaky clean looking. It really is hard to believe even now. So somebody sent me a picture a couple of weeks ago of what Lauren Tweez looks like now, and we're basically talking the old Roseanne, plus about 40 more pounds. Matter of fact, to put the picture up, without comment, by the way, and that's an important part of this, without comment, I didn't say, wow, look at this, look how terrible she looks. I just put the pictures up side by side, as if to say, look at this. You know why? Because part of my job is producing spectacle. You do things and say things and post things that get people's attention. That's the name of this gig, okay? My life is not like your life. This is what I have to do to, as they say, stay relevant. You got to do stuff. You have to say interesting things. You got to make interesting observations. You can't just get on Facebook and go, oh, wow, my big toe hurts today. You have to say something or post something that is, worth commentary, stuff that gets people talking. And I don't do it irresponsibly. There's lots of people who will put up anything just to look at me. The stuff I put up, I think, is it's really interesting stuff. It's the same sort of stuff I do here on the podcast. We talk about things and we post things on social media that maybe other people don't. Things that will maybe even on occasion get you thinking a little bit. Heaven forbid, right? But this idea of even making an observation that somebody's appearance has changed dramatically, which is all this was. I want to repeat this. I put two pictures up side by side, the old Lauren Tweez and the new Lauren Tweez, without comment. And I just put the picture up as if to say, look, and now I am, quote unquote, fat shaming. No, I'm not. Fat shaming, which is, I don't even know where that term came from, but at least the concept, if I understand it correctly, is to ridicule people. And ridicule does involve an ongoing process. Even if you say something that is patently offensive, unless you do it all the time, you can't really be accused of things like bigotry and stuff like that. Maybe poor judgment. Maybe you said something that didn't come out the same, the way you intended it to. Or maybe you're just a dope and you don't have any social skills. And so you think you can say something and you find out very quickly, that was really unnecessarily guttural or offensive or just plain unnecessary, stupid, boring, all that sort of stuff. So I try to be very, very responsible with what I say and what I do. But this term fat shaming, you can't even observe anymore. Just the very act of observing, recognizing, the equivalent of just looking at something and going, wow, look at that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not like I said, look at Julie McCoy. Look at the way she used to look. Look at the way she looks at now. She's really fat. Let's kill her, for God's sakes. And the other thing is, it's absolutely destroying comedy. People like this who see themselves as self-appointed captains of some sort of sociological squad running around going, oh, I just found another one. Let's get them. No, let's get you. You're the ones who are messing up the world. All this political correctness. Can't make a joke about anything anymore. All the comedians, everybody from Jerry Seinfeld down to Chris Rock and everybody in between, all saying the same thing. You can't even, a lot of these comedians, they won't even go to college campuses anymore because this is where it's really prevalent. If Henny Youngman or Rodney Dangerfield were working today, they'd get run out of town. They'd be canceled. I'll tell you, my wife is so fat when she sits around the house. She sits around the house. I'll tell you, my wife, she's no bargain. Two men could make love to her at the same time and never meet. See, we used to laugh at jokes like that. You know why? Because they were jokes. Yes, it came at the expense of all the people in the audience who are sitting there going, oh, I'm really fat. That wasn't very nice. Yeah, well, the next joke is about a bricklayer. You think all the bricklayers in the audience are going, hey, you can't joke about me. We used to joke about drinking. It's Foster Brooks. I wonder if, and by the way, my daughter is 13 and she's into Dean Martin, if you can believe that. And so I introduced her to those two spots that they used to do. Two spot is like the Smothers Brothers or Abbott and Costello. You have two people and they play off one another. Sonny and Cher, all that sort of stuff. Two spots. And I showed the actor by the name of Foster Brooks, who a lot of you will remember, who would come out and play this guy who was drunk off his ass. But also the material was really funny. It's, I mean, anybody can just stand there and do that. But these things were written really crisp, and he would come out, and Dean Martin would be like in tears. He'd be laughing so hard. Well, you wonder if in 2023, would Foster Brooks be canceled? It's to the point where you can't say anything about anybody without somebody being offended. And this is of great concern to me because as I get ready to go back on over-the-air radio for the first time in St. Louis in 13 and a half years, the world has changed. And if I go on the air on the new radio station and start doing exactly what I did in 2009, well, it's a ridiculous question because I'm not going to do it because you can't. People will jump on you the very first day. You can't tell a joke about somebody who's overweight. Why? I never agreed to that. You know, one day people just started saying that, and then they come up with the idea of fat shaming. They give it a name. And then every time somebody says something about somebody whose stomach is fatter than the one on George Clooney, all of a sudden you're a horrible person. You're a bigot. You're fat shaming. Fuck you. I never agreed to this. This whole idea of, well, you can't make a joke about this, you can't make a joke about that. Fuck you. I'm not apologizing for anything anymore because since 2009, the last time I did an over-the-air radio show in St. Louis, since that time, people have said and done things not only on local radio, but also on national TV, cable, Netflix, you name it. Stuff that's like, wow. Some of the stuff people are performing on your TV screen or on movie screens are things that, in my view, even if you were thinking them, you wouldn't say them, let alone put them on film or on videotape. It's crazy. I look like Mother Teresa compared to some of this stuff. So don't bother me with this. At present, I have, I believe it's somewhere just over 1,100 people that I have blocked on Facebook. 1,100. I would probably say 60% of those went during the Trump administration when I was just in the back of my head thinking life is too short to be dealing with these people who are trying to tell me about the virtues of Donald Trump. I'm sorry, click, you're gone. Out of sight, out of mind. It's real easy to do, and I'll be happy to do it again as often as I have to maintain my sanity. You know, when we had a problem, we had a problem like back in the 1950s with all the repression and all the forced compliance. It was an actual sociological demand that we fit in. We want a homogeneous society here. And at the same time, there was practicality. And in this clip from, I think they said it was 1955 or something like that, you have a somewhat matronly looking woman addressing a bunch of adolescent girls. Oh, I remember these days.
Good morning, girls. I'm going to talk to you this morning about the way you look. Now, I've heard it said that we women attach too much importance to our appearance, but that isn't true. After all, the way we look exerts so much influence on the way we feel and on the way other people feel about us that it really is very important. Remember, you can't have good looks without soap and water. There's no substitute for the daily bath as a groundwork for glamour. Brilliant teeth need brushing. Gleaming hair means frequent and thorough shampooing. And keep that air of freshness by using a deodorant regularly. It's a shortcut to social security. Sleep comes next to cleanliness as a beauty base. And I mean sleep. Not just going to bed if that means sitting up writing letters or listening to music. I've seen lots of sparkling eyes and good complexion sacrificed to swing records at bedtime. Mind you, I'm all for music in its place. But there is a lot of sound sense in that old expression, beauty sleep.
9 hours of sleep. It's amazing there was any time left in the day to do anything productive. And what the hell music was she listening to, by the way? Sasha, she had the radio on listening to a marching band. Oh, crap. I'm losing the will to live. STDs are on the rise. You know, we heard all this talk about during the pandemic about people were just hooking up like crazy. You know, you'd find somebody who was vaccinated, somebody who didn't have COVID, somebody who had quarantined for 2 weeks. And you're like, okay, I think we can exchange bodily fluids safely. And they had us convinced there was tons of this stuff going around. Well, it turns out that must not have been right because there's a lot of people doing a lot of catching up right now, and the STDs are a result of all of it. The Juul people, when I say Juul, that is J-U-U-L, those are the vaping people. Yep, $462 million settlement going to six states. The government was able to prove that the Juul people were deliberately targeting young people and teens with all these little sweet flavors. Why do I have this feeling they'll pay the $500 million and be right back in business. Tonight in Tampa Bay is the beginning of three consecutive nights at Raymond James Stadium, the place where the Tampa Bay Bucks and Tom Brady have been playing the last couple of years. Taylor Swift in town for three straight nights. What do we got here? Obstructed view tickets for tonight. This is obstructed view. $529 each. If you want a clear view from the field, that will run you, and this is per ticket, $4,079. And for some reason, outside the stadium, there's people with yoga mats doing yoga out there. Is that something? What did I miss? Is she like a big yoga person or something? And how does that contribute to the overall experience? There's things I'm not understanding here. I'm not able to connect the dots. Let's go see Taylor Swift. Let's pay a minimum of like $1,200 for tickets. We got to pay for parking. They're going to gouge you for that, $60. Meanwhile, Taylor Momsen, if that name sounds familiar, well, I've talked about her before. She was a little girl who went to grade school in U City with both of my daughters, especially my oldest daughter, Addison. And she used to come over after school sometimes, and Addison would play with her at her place. Taylor Momsen, the little girl who got the role as Cindy Lou Who in the Ron Howard version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey. So she gets that job, comes back to St. Louis, continues her education, gets out of high school, and busts out. This little elf-like looking girl, little Taylor Momsen, grows into a woman and goes on. Well, I called it punk rock, and a lot of people jumped all over me for that, but I think it's because they're looking at her current work, which was on display Sunday night in that Beach Boys special, and she came out and actually didn't do too bad a job. It's just so funny to see her at almost 30 years old and looking, you know, significantly trashed out. But I get the idea that that is part of the overall act. But, I mean, this chick was running around for the last 10 years with, you know, an X made out of electrical tape on her boobs, strategically placed with no shirt on, and with her hair all stringy and just, you know, her mascara running all over her face and just screaming into the microphone. And to me, that sounds like punk. People, I'm not sure the people who were trying to correct me on this last night on social media understood that I was referring to what she's been doing for the last decade and a half. I don't think most people even saw it or knew about it. The Fox News versus Dominion trial begins next week. If it gets there, you would not believe it how often the lawyers are literally coming up the stairs of the courthouse on Monday morning where a deal finally is made. They go, all right, look, how about if we increase the price to this and we agree to this and this and this? And finally they all look at each other and go, okay, put it in writing and then we don't have to go to trial. Can't believe that Fox News will allow this to go to trial. They will lose it all. Fox News has no case. And now they're admonished by the judge, too, because the judge found out that the Fox News lawyers were withholding evidence, which is something you can't do. And so as a response to that, the judge said, okay, fine. The prosecution in this case, the side representing Dominion, you get to do this and this and this. You can get extra witnesses. You can add this. You can add that. That's your punishment to the Fox people. That's your punishment for withholding evidence, and we found out about it. You big dummies. Like I said, I still can't believe this will go. I haven't even had any chance to talk about the Cardinals. Jordan Walker, 12-game hit streak. He got punched out in his second at-bat last night on a pitch that was 5 inches outside. All he did was come back in his third at-bat, get the base hit, and extend the win streak to 12. The Tampa Bay Rays have won 12 straight to start the season. The record is 13. Some ballparks are going, hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We shortened these games by a half hour, 45 minutes. Look what it's done to our beer sales. So now they're saying we're going to sell beer a little bit later into the game. Usually the cutoff, depending on the ballpark, is around the seventh inning because, you know, there's insurance issues and just public relations. And it's like, you don't want to be selling beer in the ninth inning knowing that in 15 minutes, that guy's going to be out in the car heading down Highway 40. So he cut off the beer sales in the seventh inning. Well, all you have to do is have your beer sales seriously curtailed, and suddenly all that public relations and all that safety issues goes right out the window. And I don't know. I can't get this confirmed. It was just that last night, one of the other golfers in the Masters, the other day, what the hell was his name? Jason Day. So he saw Tiger pull out of the Masters tournament midway over the weekend. He seemed to be limping, and nobody was ever given any explanation why he pulled out, everybody was assuming it was an injury. Well, this guy, Jason Day, says, yeah, Tiger told me that a screw, presumably a screw that was put into his leg or his hip or something like that after the accident, they had to screw everything back together, that a screw somehow must have gotten loose and actually popped out of his skin. So he's looking down going, ouch, why does that hurt? Why does that hurt? And he pulls his pants up and looks, and here's a screw sticking out of a bone and puncturing his skin and sticking out. Well, from what we know about Tiger now, it wouldn't be the first time he had a screw loose. All right, late night tonight, Bill Hader, Jane Goodall, and Metallica on with Kimmel. Stephen Colbert's got Nicolas Cage, Ben Affleck, and Chris Messina. Chris Messina is the actor who portrays Michael Jordan's lawyer in this movie, Air, about the invention of, I almost said invasion, and it practically was an invasion of the Air Jordan shoe. He's really, really good in this movie, Air. I wouldn't be surprised if he got an Academy Award nomination, too. He's really, really good, and he's on with James Corden and also Ben Affleck. Pete Davidson's going to host Saturday Night Live on May 6th. Geddy Lee releasing an autobiography called My Effin' Life in November. Birthdays today, Allison Williams from the cable series Girls and also the movie Get Out. 35 today, Max Weinberg, 72. The Reverend Al Green is 77. Sidney Poitier on the stage in 1964, first black actor to receive a Best Actor Oscar. Lilies of the Field. Amen. David Crosby arrested for the second time in 3 weeks with drugs back on this date in 82. Cops found him in his dressing room with cocaine. Pete Rose hit number 4,000 on this date 39 years ago. Billy Joel officially separating from Christie Brinkley on this date in 94. And Phil Spector convicted of second-degree murder for shooting actress Lana Clarkson. At the end of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, when the biology teacher shows up at the prom for, you know, for the final big scene, and he comes walking in, and this guy's hideous looking, all right? And he comes walking in with this stellar 15 on a scale of 10 blonde. That was Lana Clarkson. That was the woman that Phil Spector shot and killed. And today is Thomas Jefferson's birthday. If he were alive today, he'd be 280 years old. And probably somehow still look younger than President Joe Biden. And with that, the Jason Corcoran Podcast for Thursday, April 13th, 2023 is in the can. And I don't know why I'm laughing. I mean, I'm just an absolutely miserable fucking mood. I'm losing the will to live. Assuming that I decide to figure out a way to get out of bed tomorrow morning, I'll be here. Maybe you will be too. In the meantime, you can email me, jc@jconline.com. On Facebook, the Showgram with JC Corcoran. Have a better day than I'm having so far. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
So snap out that light early enough every night to get 8 or 9 hours of this most effective beauty treatment.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.